Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
This is obviously an unprecedented offseason for college football. We all understand that. We know the impact the coronavirus has had on the sport, at least in terms of our ability to project what we expect to happen this fall. And yes, I have always said that I expect football to be played this fall. I'm more sure than ever that Georgia's going to have a season. Some of the rest of the country, I guess, we'll have to wait and figure out. But I believe it's certainly way more likely than not that UGA is playing football this fall. And yet, even with that said, there's some questions about what is exactly that going to look like? You know, how is exactly all that going to play out? The players in particular, what can we expect from them? And admittedly, I think there's a certain level of honesty that goes with saying, I'm not quite sure how certain players return. But this is both true for Georgia and true around the country, that when you're away from campus, when you're forced to train on your own, and even though that the players check in with the coaches on the Zoom and the video teleconference stuff, and they're sharing a lot of what they do on social media, there's still an element of a lot of this is done on your own. You have to be your own boss. You have to find your own sense of internal motivation. That's easier for some than others. I think it just goes without saying. It is just a fact that certain players around the country, probably one or two at Georgia, will probably return to campus, return for the start of the season, and they probably won't be in football shape. Hopefully, if you're Georgia, it's not too many of those, and Georgia would seem to have the depth to overcome some of that if it is an issue. But for 85 scholarship players across the country, or even if you just want to keep this to the SEC for a moment, 85 scholarship players across 14 different schools, a few of them come back having not taken great care of their bodies over the course of the coronavirus lockdown, and that's going to be a problem for them, especially at the beginning of the season. So if you're a Georgia fan and you're thinking about how the Georgia players in particular are working against this, I guess I've noticed something a little bit over the last couple of days that a few Georgia players seem to have going for them that I think probably helps them make sure they're not some of the ones who get hurt by having been forced to be off of campus. And if you watch the video version of Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp today, I showed you these videos. I'll make sure that I put a link to the show when I post the show at DogNation.com so you can kind of catch up and be a part of this if you'd like to be. But it was cool to see Jamari Salyer, Georgia offensive lineman, who has had a couple of videos pop up of him over the last couple of days where he's really putting in what appears to be some really good work, seems to be in great shape ahead of the start of the season. And in one of the videos in particular, I noticed something that I thought, wow, that's an opportunity to take advantage of that the average college football player probably just doesn't quite have at his disposal. In the video that struck my attention, Salyer was working out with Andrew Thomas. Now, for those of you that are close to the Georgia program, that know the Georgia program, you know Salyer and Thomas is just good friends, former high school teammates at Pace Academy. But Thomas has grown to be a whole lot more than just a friend and former teammate of Salyer at the high school and college level. He is also the number four pick in the NFL draft. He's obviously one of the bedrock future of the New York Giants and just came off a great career at UGA. Now think about this if you're Jamari Salyer for a moment. You have a chance to go through a workout with a guy like Thomas, a chance to learn more from him, a chance to be challenged and pushed more by him. If you're trying to make sure you're making the most of your coronavirus lockdown workouts, if you're trying to do the best that you can to make sure that you're ready to go as a key important part of the Georgia offensive line for this upcoming season, having Thomas right there along beside you, that's the kind of luxury that the average college football player just does not quite have at his disposal. It's worth pointing out that Thomas has seemingly taken quite an active role in not just working alongside Jamari Salyer, but also touting him as a big-time player as well. You remember we had Andrew as a part of our Dog Nation Appreciation video series the other day when he was talking about what he expects from Georgia this upcoming season. Salyer was a name that was very much on his mind. He's been pushing him in workouts, but also pushing for him in some of his interviews, including this, Andrew Thomas on Jamari Salyer.
A new face, Jamari Salyer, our offense, I think, is going to be new. A lot of guys, expected him to play really early. Things happen, but he's going to be a great player. He's kept his head up. He's going to continue to fight. I think he's going to, be the anchor on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's probably right from Thomas, and I love the phrase that he uses there at the end, the anchor of the offensive line. I think that there's a really good chance that's true for Salyer, and I don't think it's asking too much from him to consider him a bedrock anchor, to consider him a key piece of the offensive line, even though we're going to see him in a greatly expanded role this season compared to anything he's done thus far in his Georgia career. He's out of position potentially as well. When he came into Georgia, we thought of him as an interior offensive lineman, either a center or a guard. Now he's in almost all likelihood an offensive tackle, but Isaiah Wynn showed you in 2017 that you can be a guy possibly playing out of position, but also having a great year. Wynn was a great offensive tackle for Georgia in 2017, even though we probably thought of him as a different kind of offensive lineman maybe prior to that season. So I think that Sider could very much follow in those footsteps. And I think the fact that he gets a chance to have the luxury of working with Thomas during the offseason is one of the ways which he can ensure that his offseason workouts are maximized to their fullest potential. But Salyer is not the only Georgia player for whom that's probably true. There was also a video that got some attention this week of James Cook. It's a really nice, well-done video. Cook looks great in the video. But when I went to Cook's timeline to see it, Dog Nation wrote about this. There was a link to the Cook Twitter feed. I was scrolling and looking at some of the other stuff from James on Twitter, and I saw another picture that reminded me so much of seeing Salyer and Andrew Thomas side by side. This was a video. This is actually a photo of James Cook working alongside his brother Dalvin Cook. And in the picture, both guys are in incredible shape, as you'd expect them to be. And I was thinking very much the same thing. Wow, this is such an important year for James Cook this upcoming season. You know, he gets a chance to potentially thrive in a brand new offense with a creative offensive coordinator who may just be more equipped to get something out of Cook than maybe James Coley was this past season. And it's crucial offseason for Cook to make sure that he's ready for all of that. And he's got something at his disposal the average college football player might just not have. Dalvin Cook was a great running back at Florida State, and he's been a very good running back, I'd say, for the Minnesota Vikings. As a brother, a sibling, pushing you in the offseason to be as good as he has been, to be as good as you can be, if James Cook has got that at his disposal, then he's probably ahead of the game compared to where a lot of people are. And by the way, don't discount the role that Cook could have on this upcoming team in this upcoming offense. I thought it was really interesting the other day when Kirby Smart made an appearance on the Atlanta radio station 680 The Fan. He was talking about the need for playmakers to emerge for Georgia this season. One of the names that Smart mentioned is the aforementioned Cook. Even though we haven't seen a ton from Cook in terms of being featured in the offense, Smart thinks of him as one of the potential playmakers for this upcoming season. In fact, let me let you hear what Kirby Smart said about James Cook and some other Georgia players when he made the appearance on 680 The Fan a couple weeks ago.
I think the biggest thing when you're looking for the difference is going to be who the playmakers are. You know, last year DeAndre Swift was a feature presentation. Cager early in the season was that. You know, who are those guys going to be? Because every offense, as you well know, is built around who the guys are we got to get the ball to.
Right.
So it was Amir. You know, we got some tight ends that we think are going to be good players. James Cook. We'll have some really good players there to hopefully get the ball to. George is another one. We got some wideouts that we've got to get involved in the offense to be successful as we want to be. So how different will it look? That's just going to be based on who those playmakers are. I just hope we get the opportunity to find that out.
Yeah, boy, Kirby, I hope we get the opportunity to find that out as well. But when you hear Smart say, we think that James Cook's one of our playmakers, well, if I'm Cook and I'm hearing Smart say that, you better believe I'm going to work as hard as I can during the offseason. And for some players, that opportunity to be pushed to be as good as you can be is just easier for some than others. The fact that James has got Dalvin Cook to work with, I think, is an example of that. As I mentioned before, Sal, you're getting a chance to work with Andrew Thomas, is an example of that. There are also some Georgia players getting a chance to work with personal coaches like our buddy Terrence Edwards and others. You know, if you're a Georgia fan, you want the best for Georgia players. The fact they have these resources available to them, even during the coronavirus lockdown, to me, it sets up a scenario where when they return back to campus, when they get ready for the start of practices, they may be in a little bit better shape than some of their counterparts around the SEC. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. It's good to have you with us, whether it be video, still there for you in the mornings on Facebook and YouTube, coming soon again on Twitter. I know some of you have reached out to me on Twitter to say you're ready to see Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp back on Twitter again. We hope to be able to do that really soon. In fact, we should have an announcement for you on that in just a couple of days' time, and I'm really excited about that. Of course, always great to be with you on the radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref and podcast form wherever you find them. Apple, Google, Spotify, the world famous dognation.com. Some of you listen right there through SoundCloud. However you find us, thanks for being here today, and really appreciate Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. The fact of the matter is, a lot of you know this to be true, that in an audience as big as ours is, statistically speaking, a lot of you have either dealt with a divorce or you could be on the verge of having to deal with that. It's a tough situation. The good news, though, is that tough situation can be made better as long as you have a smart, powerful, strong, fearless advocate on your side. And that's what I think of my friends at Meriwether and Tharp as being. They're your source for Georgia divorce. What I mean when I say that is they've been through this situation thousands of times with their clients, and all that earned experience, that gained knowledge from doing this over and over and over again, is stuff that can be put to work for you to help you rebuild your finances, to help you, you know, recreate your relationship with your children, reform you, make you whole again. It's all possible. It can happen as long as you have my friends as Meriwether and Tharp as an advocate on your side. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. Meriwether and Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. Got a fun conversation coming up with Connor Riley here on today's program. Connor wrote some interesting things about Georgia quarterback Jamie Newman this morning on dognation.com. It leads me to make a statement about what Kirby Smart has a chance to do to Dan Mullen this year. We'll get more into that with Connor coming up in just a little bit. Before we get to that, I want to play a piece of audio here. This comes from Auburn president. I believe his name is Jay Goode. I think that's how you say it, Jay Googe. So there was a YouTube video that the Auburn president Googe shared with incoming freshmen to Auburn University. Now, the reason I'm playing this audio is, and I think you'll join me in saying this, in all the talk of is football returning and is it returning across the country at the same pace, every single state, every single conference, we've heard a lot of things on that recently. However, I say the most forceful statement I've heard on all of this thus far comes from Jay Googe, the Auburn president here. Let me let you hear it for yourself, and you tell me if it means as much to you as it does mean to me. Here is the Auburn president.
I would tell you that no one knows for sure all the details of what may happen in the future. But I do know a few things that are going to happen at Auburn University. We're going to open classes this fall. We're going to have fraternity and sorority activities. We're going to have the more than 500 club activities that will be underway with student participation and leadership. We're going to have freshman convocation. We're going to have popsicles and pizza with the president. We're going to have football this fall. We're going to have all of the activities that we have every fall.
So let me tell you what I think is different about what Googe says there and compared to what we've heard in the past, including from some Georgia officials like Jerry Moorhead and Greg McGarrity and others. We've heard a lot of it's our plan to have football, or we are intending to have football. Hey, we expect to be playing football this fall. There's been a lot of that in the chatter from key figures associated with college football over the course of the last few weeks. And we understand that the need to kind of hedge against something that we still don't know everything there is to know about the coronavirus, and we can't predict exactly how the future is going to play out. People have been getting predictions wrong on this virus since it became well known a couple of months ago. So you understand why public figures hedge when they make statements. Even though they've been optimistic as of late, hey, we expect to be playing football, the word expect was still doing a lot of heavy lifting in a sentence like that. We're planning to play football, still leave some room for the decision to go another direction if the news itself goes another direction. What I'm hearing there from the Auburn president, though, is a brand new way of speaking about this. In a YouTube video sent to incoming freshmen at Auburn University, he didn't say we're planning on having football. He said we're having football. And he said we're going to be having Greek events. We're going to be having a lot of the on-campus stuff that, frankly, if you choose to go to a school like Auburn, because you couldn't get to UGA, but if you choose to go to a school like Auburn, those are the things that you expect. That's why you pay big-time out-of-state tuition prices to go to a place like that, or for people who live in Alabama, why you would choose a school like that, because you want to have all the on-campus activities that SEC schools are famous for. I do think it's kind of interesting that the Auburn president does not say, and it's our intention, we're going to do this. That's what we're planning to do right now. No, he says, we are doing this. I think it's another example of something that I may end up saying a couple times in today's program. I've never been more sure. that football is returning. Georgia's going to play a season this year. What does it look like? How many fans are in the stands? And does it definitely start at the very beginning of September like it's supposed to? I'm going to withhold a little bit of judgment on some of that kind of stuff, but my best guess is it looks a whole lot more like a normal season than maybe some people thought it would at one point in time. And I think the latest piece of evidence that suggests that is just how forceful and just how confident Auburn President Jay Googe speaks about his own university's football efforts. It certainly seems like the SEC at least is on its way back, and I think you'll join me in saying that is very good news. Thanks for being here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. We'll do a little bit more on this topic and, as I said, some stuff on Newman, a little bit more on Cook and Sawyer. Let's get ready to welcome in Connor Riley from DogNation.com.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll get ready to say hello to Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp this morning. Connor's got a great piece up at DogNation.com looking at Georgia quarterback Jamie Newman and what professional troll Danny Cannell recently said about him. I think that Connor brings up some good points on that, so that's where I want to begin our conversation today. But first, Connor, I'll say thanks for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Hope you're doing well today.
Yep, BA, thanks for having me on. As always, it is a pleasure.
So I read your Good Day UGA piece this morning on Jamie Newman and the skepticism that Danny Cannell showed of him. And I said this on my show yesterday that, A, I don't hate Cannell as bad as some people probably assume that I do, because I think that shtick is kind of funny, and Cannell's clearly got a shtick that's working for him. I don't think he's employed without it. So from that standpoint, the anti-SEC thing has worked out pretty well for him. And specifically speaking, I do think it's fair to be skeptical of the impact that Newman can make at Georgia. I thought you made a good case for that, at least worth UGA fans considering. So I'll give you the floor to kind of explain some of it. Of course, I want people to read your story, but a little thumbnail sketch if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think it's either like The Onion or Clickhole. There's a fake comedy headline out there that's the worst guy you know makes actually a good point, yeah. And it's sort of devastating. And that's kind of where it is with Cannell, because obviously I think a lot of SEC fans just sort of tune out Cannell anytime he says something, because he does have a certain anti-SEC bias as a part of his shtick, which I think has been very successful for him. But the things he said about Jamie Newman, he wasn't critical of Newman or saying he's a bad player or anything along those lines. He just said, I want to see it from this Georgia offense, and I want to see it from Jamie Newman. Now, I don't think any Georgia fan is realistically expecting Newman to be Burrow 2.0, but there are some pretty high expectations on Newman, and we only really have to go back and look at last year where there was a new offense came in. We all gave them sort of the benefit of the doubt, and the reality is that they just did not deserve that given the losses that they had sustained at the wide receiver position and what turned out to be a pretty subpar season from that Georgia offense. So, as much as you see Jamie Newman at the top of NFL draft boards and near the top of the Heisman odds, I think we're all right to have some skepticism about what he'll be at Georgia this season.
Yeah, so here is what I've said about this. And admittedly, I have no idea if Jamie Newman will be first-round pick good. It is fair to say he was getting some draft love even when he was still a Wake Forest quarterback. So it's not necessarily a Johnny-come-lately point to say NFL scouts may like him, but I don't know if he'll be as good as these first-round projections suggest that he could be, or the betting market that has him near the top of the list of the Heisman Trophy. I don't know that he'll be that good either. I assume that it's impossible to be as good at Georgia as Joe Burrow was for LSU just because of how Ruthian the season that Joe Burrow put together last year. That may not even be a possibility. But here, as a Georgia fan, is what I'm very comfortable saying. In fact, I think I've told you this before. If you give me the choice of all the available transfer quarterbacks, I think Newman would have been the one I would have picked. And I guess KJ Costello was probably rated higher on the 24/7 Sports transfer rating list than Newman was. But frankly, Costello is a little bit of what Georgia's had in the past. I'm kind of excited about Georgia having something a little bit different. I think I'll take Newman over Costello because of that. When I was touting for Derek King, the honest truth is I didn't know a lot about Jamie Newman. I've learned a lot more about him since then. I think I'm even okay with Newman over Derek King here at the moment. The other thing that I've said, Connor, is when you look at the current situation in the SEC, it's a good year to be uncertain at quarterback because LSU's in the same boat. I think that Alabama's in the same boat. Tennessee is probably even more uncertain at quarterback than Georgia is right now. The two established quarterbacks that Georgia plays, Kyle Trask and Bo Nix, I'm not trading Newman for either one of those guys. And frankly, the most established quarterback in the SEC is probably Kellen Mond, but I haven't seen enough from Mond that would make me say if I had the magical power to bring him to Georgia instead of Jamie Newman, I don't believe that I would do that either.
Right, and I think we've seen in recent college football seasons, sometimes having an unknown at the quarterback position is a very good thing. You think back to Kyler Murray at Oklahoma. You look at some of the other recent Heisman Trophy winners. A lot of those guys have sort of come out of nowhere and gone on to have huge seasons. Now, I've been pro Costello, and I think the unfortunate circumstances to led Newman not getting a spring practice rep in, I think – perhaps maybe dings him a little bit. But again, Newman has other than maybe perhaps Bryce Young at Alabama this coming season, I think Newman has the highest upside, where if he's able to stay healthy, if George Pickens and Dominique Blaylock are healthy and build on solid freshman seasons, his ceiling is as high as any quarterback in the SEC. It's just a question of, can all the pieces around him, Newman included, sort of click and fit together to make sort of that potent enough Georgia offense that can complement what should be the best defense in the SEC for Georgia.
All right, final point for me on this topic, and I'm going to be an unabashed homer, 100 miles an hour fan here on this, but all of the stuff we're talking about here of justifiable skepticism of Newman coupled with the growing level of hype surrounding Kyle Trask at Florida and expectations of the Gators on the field. Connor, if Georgia beats Florida this year, I believe it'll be the sweetest victory for Georgia in the series so far for Kirby Smart. And in fact, I'll go so far as to say this. I think that Kirby Smart can get Dan Mullen fired this year. Not at the end of the season, but the process. Hear me out on this. Not at the end of this season, but the process that leads to Dan Mullen being run out of a rail. The process that leads to him being run out on a rail in Gainesville will begin this year. If Mullen, the offensive mastermind, with the returning quarterback, does not have a better offense than transfer from Wake Forest, offensive coordinator that Georgia plucked from the ranks of recently fired NFL guys, I think that Munkin's is a big-time hire. But the truth is, a lot of Gators fans don't. If Georgia has the better offense, if Georgia has the better quarterback, at that point in time, what is there left to sell Dan Mullen on to Florida fans? The beginning of the end for Mullen in Gainesville could be this year if Newman outplays Trask.
See, this is why I love BA, because while some college football writers and thinkers are just trying to piece things together and get through this offseason, BA is still bringing you the 100-mile-an-hour A-plus takes here. I think you're right on with Mullen there. This kind of if there's going to be a season, you have to show you can beat Georgia, and that's something Mullen has to do and has yet to show. This would seem to be the season to do it, just given the uncertainty on the Georgia offense. But to your point with Mullen and Cannell's larger point that got everyone's attention, that Florida is the SEC East favorite. They still have some questions, and while yes, quarterback isn't one of them, that game last year between Georgia and Florida was not as close as I think the final score had indicated. Florida never had a chance to take the lead or even tie the game with the ball in the second half of that contest. So, to your larger point, one, the next victory over Florida is always going to be the sweetest victory in this rivalry.
That is probably true.
But I think your point on Mullen is very interesting, because I think there are already a lot of skeptics out there comparing him to Georgia and what he's doing with Kirby Smart. And if he loses this year, where, I would say it's probably believed from a national media standpoint, Georgia and Florida are at least pretty close to equal footing. And if they lose again, it's three straight losses to Smart with Mullen at Florida. And those Florida teams have all been top 10 teams. So you sort of wonder, all right, is this ever really going to happen for Mullen at Florida?
I think it's also fair to add the 2017 loss for Mississippi State at Georgia, because people forget Mississippi State was only a field goal underdog that day. And a lot of people believed at the time that Mississippi State also had the better quarterback with Nick Fitzgerald in comparison to the freshman Jake Fromm. So in terms of bad losses for Mullen against Smart, the trip to Athens in 2017, when he absolutely got ran out of the stadium, that wasn't a good look for Mullen either.
Right, and I actually think, going into this game this year, obviously we have to see how the season plays out. That September 19th contest against Alabama will loom large, but you know, I feel pretty comfortable saying Mullen's going to have more pressure on him in this game than Kirby Smart is. And that's pretty rare for the most part in just about every game that Smart has coached.
Let me move on and talk about something different. And I think we've probably been of the same mind on a topic. I wonder if you're evolving at the same pace that I am. The conversation we just had, who's going to win a game on the field? What does it mean for the players and coaches involved? That's the fun thing for me to do on this show. And that's for the most part what I've tried to do during the coronavirus lockdown. Every twist and turn of the who says football's coming back and who says it hasn't, I, for the most part, stayed away from that because I don't think it's fun for the audience, and I think a lot of it's very hodgepodgey and hard to figure out. However, Connor, are you like me to the point where it's getting more difficult to ignore this because we're getting close to the actual decision being made, whether it's made blanket across the country, piecemeal in different regions or different conferences? I find myself wanting to talk more about it on the show. I find myself paying a lot more close attention to the news itself. This is not theoretical anymore. We are coming up on the beginning of summer. We have some SEC programs seemingly, including Georgia, it would appear, on its way back to campus. Other parts of the country where that, as of now, is not happening. To me, this is getting harder to ignore and, frankly, becoming more important to talk about, even though the results of the conversation are frustrating for some because of how polarizing it can be. I find myself having a more difficult time ignoring it because we are now on the verge of announcements and decisions needing to be made. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I've always sort of been I'm going to pay attention to, you know, what certain people are saying every day. You know, Paul Feinbaum, I think, has become, just because of the people he has access to, has become, I think, a fairly important voice and sort of weather barometer on all of this. But I've also always sort of held the belief that we're going to have football in the fall because, one, there's just too much money to be lost, and two, as pessimistic as I can be sometimes, I choose to try and think on the positive side of things, and I don't necessarily want to think about what a fall without football would look like for many, many different reasons. And the thing I just keep coming back to is, you know, to your larger point, like eventually we're reaching a point where decisions are going to have to be made. I know the NCAA last night continued to extend its dead period on recruiting. Honestly, I'm okay if they say no visits until September 1st, because that just – sort of, you know, no one's really, I think, rushing to go out and visit campuses in July, and they extended up to the end of June 30th, and they'll sort of see where they are there. And I think the important thing, and sort of from this point, I guess, but today's May 14th to the next month from now, some point in the next month, we're probably going to have an idea of when teams and athletes are going to come back to campus, if that's going to be a thing. And unfortunately, I think with what you're seeing going on in California, it might not necessarily be sort of a national blanket thing. It's probably going to be left up to you, hopefully at a conference level and potentially even a state level.
Yeah, here is what I think I'm comfortable saying. Georgia's playing football this year. They're going to have a season. Most of the teams that Georgia plays are also going to play football and have a season this year. What's not entirely clear to me is, does the season begin on time? And kind of what I told Mike Griffith yesterday is, obviously the Pac-12 is the place that would hold us up in terms of kicking off football kind of that, you know, weekend that it typically kicks off. What I told Mike yesterday, and I'm curious if you agree with me on this, I think the Pac-12 has some leverage in getting the rest of college football to wait on them for a little bit, because I think ultimately the sport itself knows there's more money to be made as long as everyone in that playoff coalition is cooperative with each other. I think that the other conferences would want to be at least a little bit patient with the Pac-12 on that standpoint, at least a little bit. However, if the people within those states, California in particular, were to draw a stern, hard line in the sand, the leverage the Pac-12 has eventually is not infinite, and eventually the rest of the country would move on without them. Do you agree with me on this, that the Pac-12 would have some leverage potentially in convincing the rest of college football to hold off for a couple of weeks? Frankly, I hope that's not what happens. But I do think because of the way the playoff coalition works together and the fact they're big votes for this body coming up in the years ahead on expanding the playoff and things like that, the Pac-12 may hold a little bit of leverage in terms of the season beginning at the very beginning of September, end of August, the way that it's supposed to.
So I actually think it's less the Pac-12 and it's more the state of California that sort of has that leverage. And obviously the four Power Five teams in that state, USC, UCLA, Stanford, and Cal, I think those are the teams where those four teams are going to be the ones, and obviously the group of five teams as well, I think those are going to be the teams where if we're having to delay the start of the season because states are slow to rush back, and specifically California is slow to rush back, it'll be because of that state and sort of a delay for the rest of college football. Because as it's been pointed out many times, USC and Alabama are supposed to play in Dallas on September 5th. That's a big game, I think, for both programs. I think both programs, obviously, in an ideal situation, would want to play that game. But, you know, is Alabama going to rush out to try and find a last-minute, you know, opponent of a similar marquee? Odds are they're probably not going to be able to find that. So I do think that, you know, the Pac-12 and specifically California is sort of, I think, going to be where we see a season, whether it starts on time or whether it starts a few weeks delayed.
Let me make a quick final point on this, then I want to talk about one more thing before we let you go. You mentioned USC and California. I'm sorry, USC and Alabama. I think it's very interesting that Crimson Tide athletic director Greg Byrne has now been asked multiple times about finding a replacement for USC, and he's operating under the assumption for now that game is still going to be played. I think on the USC side of things, you hear very similar language coming out. I think that leaves the door open for the city of Los Angeles to eventually soften its stance on the lockdown that has in place here. The fact that they're still remaining at least publicly optimistic about this, I think, leads me to believe that eventually what needs to happen in California is going to happen. My prediction is Alabama, USC, the rest of the week one games do get played. Maybe that's a prediction doomed to be wrong, but my prediction is we do have week one football, including Cal playing TCU, USC playing Alabama. If I had to make a prediction right now, that's where I'm putting my money.
Yeah, and I think maybe an interesting thing to keep in mind there with USC is it is a private academic institution, so it is not beholden to the University of California school systems and sort of, you know, if they say, hey, online campus or classes are online, you know, we don't necessarily want students congregating on campus, though. I think we've already clearly seen a sea change in this idea that you need to have students on campus for there to be the football games. Yeah. The Big 12 specifically has walked back a lot of the rhetoric on that. And I think even if, you know, schools decide that they're not going to be or campuses decide they're not going to be open this fall, I would still at this point, as maybe as foolish as this might be, to have football players and athletes on campus.
Let me squeeze this in before we let you go. I think it's really interesting. I talked about this before you joined us. Jamari Salyer getting a chance to work with Andrew Thomas. I think that Salyer is obviously one of the most pivotal members of this team for Georgia in 2020. I think the fact that he has someone like Thomas to lean on in training right now and in really following his footsteps, to me, Salyer reminds me a lot of what Isaiah Wynn was for Georgia in 2017. Remains to be seen if he's that good, but I think he's a pretty safe bet to have a really good season for Georgia, even if we think he's somewhat playing out of position. What are your thoughts on Salyer right now? He's kind of in the news because the video that he's been working on, a couple of his videos have been passed around a little bit as of late. What do you think of Salyer right now?
My take has stayed the same on him. He might not be the best Georgia offensive lineman to start the season, just given, you know, he's probably going to be at one of the tackle spots, and he is not taking a ton of reps there, specifically as many as, say, Justin Schaefer at left guard or Trey Hill at center or Ben Cleveland at the right guard spot. But by the end of the 2020 season, I believe that Salyer, whether it be a right or left tackle, and I think to start the season it's going to be at left tackle, he will be Georgia's best offensive lineman, and I don't necessarily think it'll be all that close. He showed major progress, and I actually think, you know, while he only started one game in his 2019 season, I thought he had a very good year from a, you know, doing all the little things that he needed to, you know, plug in and get better and earn playing time. And then working at a right tackle position that, quite frankly, I think when he enrolled at Georgia, no one thought he would play, even the most optimistic people about Salyer. And not only did he go out there and play it, when we saw him go out there in the Sugar Bowl against the best defense in the Big 12, led by Matt Rhule, who's now the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, I thought Salyer had an excellent game that day and did a really great job filling in for Isaiah Wilson and you know, talking with Thomas, Wilson, Kinley at the NFL Combine. They all have sky-high expectations for Salyer, and I have no doubt that he's going to live up to those.
Final thing, I also mentioned James Cook before you joined us, some kind of fun stuff out there with him as of late as well. I think it's fairly obvious that the previous Georgia offensive coordinator had no idea how to use Cook. Do you think that Todd Monken will have a better plan for a player that's admittedly quite interesting and yet also at times maybe not a perfect fit for the running back position? Does Monken have a plan for Cook, you think?
I think so. I think you look at last year with the Cleveland Browns, obviously he wasn't the play caller there, but I think over the second half of that season, he did a very good job of working in Kareem Hunt with Nick Chubb and sort of getting the most out of both those backs, even though they have a little bit different skill sets. And I think it's obviously pretty easy to see, you know, Zamir White filling that Nick Chubb role, just given the physicality that he runs with. And I think Cook has the receiving skills that can sort of put him in that Hunt mode. And I do think that if Monken can sort of figure it out and get the pieces working, that he can have sort of a dual backfield to get the best out of both Zamir White and James Cook this coming fall.
Well, we feel like we've gotten the best out of you today, Connor. Thanks for spending some time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Thart. We appreciate that. Also here on this Thursday, I'll see you again this afternoon at 3 p.m. for Cover 4 Live, as you, me, Mike Griffith, Jeff Sintel all get together for some UGA talk. Looking forward to doing that with you at 3 p.m. this afternoon.
As always, it was a great time, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
As we transition to our SEC Through, I'll remind you, we are on video every single day. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. It's 10 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube, as I said before. Coming soon back again on Twitter as well. And as a part of the video, we'll do our R.S. Andrews cool down. You know, R.S. Andrews takes care of all of your air conditioning, heating, your plumbing, electric needs. And by the way, those air conditioner needs are about to be intensified. Hot weather is on the way. And if you're concerned that your air conditioning system might not be ready to go for the warm weather season to come, then the best way to get peace of mind about that is to get a R.S. Andrews $99 Smiley tune-up. Get your system back to factory fresh specs. As I said before, it only costs $99, and you'll be ready to go with cool air inside your home for the summer to come. Find them online at rsandrews.com and be part of the R.S. Andrews cool down every single day with us on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. Okay, SEC Through time, and I think this is really funny. So I saw a couple things online. Barrett Salee, our buddy from CBS Sports, touts Florida quarterback Kyle Trask as a dark horse contender for the Heisman Trophy for this upcoming season. Jim Nagy, the, I guess, executive director of the Senior Bowl, makes a comparison between Trask and Joe Burrow from a year ago, saying that he thinks that Trask may be this year's version of Joe Burrow for LSU. And boy, this is one of those moments where I'm really glad we keep receipts around here. I'm really glad that all of these takes that get sort of spitted out into the atmosphere, they don't just disappear into the ether. We have a way of documenting some of this stuff and keeping track of it. And man, oh man, isn't it amazing how much what is said about Trask right now mirrors almost 100% all the love that was given to last year's presumed starting quarterback for Florida, Felipe Franks. Now, that may seem ridiculous now on the basis of how Franks ended his Florida career, deciding he was transferring from the program, losing his starting job. All of that may seem, you know, pretty silly, just given the fact that when Franks was playing, he wasn't playing very well. But let me take you back to a year ago, all the talk that was out there. First of all, Steve Spurrier at SEC Media Days, now Spurrier's biased, but nonetheless, I'll count this. Spurrier predicted that Felipe Franks would win the Heisman Trophy. Franks himself, speaking at SEC Media Days, referencing the fact that Spurrier and Danny Werfel and Tim Tebow, all the former quarterbacks who've won Heismans at Florida, all have statues. Felipe Franks said last year in Hoover, Alabama at SEC Media Days that he wanted to be the fourth Florida quarterback to get a statue outside the stadium. This is the stuff that was being said this past offseason. Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports contributed to this, writing about Franks and talking about the success he was likely to have in the Dan Mullen offense. Dennis Dodd wrote, "Mullen doesn't have to explain himself. This is what he does." Going back to Alex Smith at Utah, he's also produced the likes of Brian Johnson, who was a 66% passer at Utah, and his current quarterback's coach. He mentions Tim Tebow, Dak Prescott, and for some reason he throws in Nick Fitzgerald in there, even though Fitzgerald's last season at Mississippi State was pretty awful. But because Mullen, quote, runs the quarterback-friendly offense, he was getting love last offseason for what he was going to do with Felipe Franks. Reese Davis from ESPN got involved in this too. Before Florida opened the season against Miami, here's what Reese Davis said about Dan Mullen. He's got a remarkable history of developing quarterbacks, and I think Felipe is the latest in that line. Now, how well he will play, he remains to be seen, Davis says. I think consistency is the big deal with Felipe. If he can play consistently as he did at the end of last season, protect the football, take the 15-yard running when it's there because he's a gifted athlete. Why not take that, keep the sticks moving, be patient? I think he's got an opportunity, he says, to have a tremendous year because I have great faith not only in Felipe Franks' ability but Dan Mullen, who has such a, well, he says it again, long history of developing quarterbacks that it'd be foolish to bet against him. Well, listen, If you bet on him a year ago, developing Felipe Franks, you'd have lost all your money, because pretty quickly the Dan Mullen's going to use Felipe Franks to be the savior of the Florida program got turned into Dan Mullen's going to use Kyle Trask to be the savior of the Florida program. My only point in bringing any of this up is everything that's being said about Trask before was said about Felipe Franks last year, and in Franks' case, it turned out not to be true. That in and of itself is not proof that Kyle Trask is not going to have a good season. But at a certain point in time, you've got to ask yourself, if the media speaks this way prior to the beginning of every single season, this wishful hope that Florida is going to return to its fun and gun roots, the way that Steve Spurrier once made the program famous and successful, at a certain point in time, doesn't anybody want to notice that none of these predictions seem to ever bear any fruit? We'll make that your SEC through. And as we wrap up here today, one more thing I wanted to mention, fair and balanced, effort at full disclosure. So earlier in the program, I talked about one of the things that the Auburn president, Jay Gugent, said about his strong statement that football is returning on the Auburn campus this upcoming season. I guess it's also fair to point out another fairly strong statement that's not quite as hopeful. Jack Swarbrick is the Notre Dame athletic director, and he's been quoted this week as saying that Notre Dame is not going to have a full capacity crowd this year. So it sounds like Notre Dame in some form or fashion is working on some degree of social distancing for this upcoming season. So probably fair to mention that in the midst of everything else. Something that's also really important to mention, our Gator Hater Updater. Now, been 1,293 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's good news. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. We'll see you back here again tomorrow.